Good morning, class. Welcome back to Principles of Therapeutic Exercise, and I'm still Captain Loro. We are going to talk to you about plyometric training. Who knows about plyometrics? Anybody hear about plyometrics? Okay, it's pretty cool stuff. We're going to shake up the body enough to learn that we can store some energy within our muscles and joints and utilize that for gain. All right, we're going to throw some big terms at you, but there's no rocket science involved, okay? Pretty easy stuff. Real easy, especially now that, you know, concentric, eccentric, okay? So, you guys are going to own this lecture. And the good news of this lecture, I don't know if you can see the slide counter, 18 slides. Okay, there's one slide. There's a second slide. If you count the opening slide, we just knocked out three. So, what's plyometric exercise? It refers to activities that enable a muscle to reach maximum force in the shortest time. It uses the natural elastic principles or properties of a muscle and the muscle stretch reflex to increase power. It employs a stretch shortening cycle, the SSC, to train power and speed. Now, do you guys remember that evil muscle spindle back when we were trying to stretch? Like, he wasn't our friend. So now we're taking the bad guy back to our side, okay? The muscle spindle is now our friend, okay? This muscle stretch reflex, this is kind of a quick reflexive arc from the muscle to the central nervous system and back down to the muscle. And because our bodies are amazing things, we could use the elastic properties of a muscle to store energy and do amazing things, okay? So, let's talk about elastic. Elastic is a material's ability to stretch, then recoil, okay? And I'll give you an example. And plastic is when you can stretch but not recoil. Like plastic, ever see plastic wrap? You stretch it. Does it go back to its pre-stretch? No. But a rubber band that is elastic, it stretches and goes back to its pre-stretch length. There's a lot of elastic principles in our body. One that's really, really important is our aorta. You know, the aorta, that main big artery that comes off our heart. You know, we talk about the left ventricle having the ability to pump blood, but it's not the left ventricle that gets the blood throughout our body. It's that recoil, that elastic principle of our aorta that does the job. So you get this wicked, wicked, high-force pump from the ventricle, left ventricle, it pushes it into that aorta. The aorta expands, right? And then what does it do? It recoils and goes woof, and pushes that blood very, very aggressively to the rest of the arteries of our body. So I tell you that because smoking destroys, nicotine destroys the elastic principles of our soft tissue. So over time, if you smoke long enough, you destroy the elastins in your body. That's why people, like, we have elastic principles of our skin. We can stretch it, right? And then we can let go. And then it goes back. Thank God I did not continue to look like that. Now, I swear, when I used to make faces at my brothers and sisters, my mom would say my face would end up staying like that. So I guess if I did that long enough, I would destroy the elastic principles of my face. But ever see that chronic smoker? That, you know, the other thing that destroys elasticity in your skin is UV rays. So that chronic smoker that likes to get more sun than they should, and by time they're in their 30s, they look like they should be in their 50s. And by time they're in their 50s, you're like trying to divvy out their worldly possessions because you know you're going to be getting them soon. But that's why, because the nicotine destroys the elasticity of their skin. So nicotine will kill the elasticity of your aorta over time, right? And then you start to have things like congestive heart failure, where the blood starts to pool up in your lower extremities, and you die a slow smoker's death because now your aorta doesn't have the capacity to really get that blood to the rest of your body. And I dare say blood and oxygen is an important component for the rest of your body. So just, that's a little shout out for you potential smokers. So, so elasticity is important. So our muscles, our tendons primarily, even our ligaments, they have elastic principles that we want to jump on so we can do great things. So SCS is the basic of plyometric exercise, okay? This is what empowers us, the stretch shortening cycle. It's It's going to get stretched and then it's shortened very quickly. Okay? Now, there's some really cool things with this. There's three distinctive phases. Do we know what eccentric is? Right? Now, we're going to teach you about this amortization phase. And again, if you start throwing amortization around a place like polyesters, you guys are going to have, your dance card will be full. I'm telling you. It's ridiculous how smart you sound. You know? And then you could use a term like sternocleidomastoid, and I will not be able to guarantee your safety. Okay? But we're going to go from eccentric to concentric, and within those time frames, okay, we're going to go through this amortization phase and then create some sick energy here. So eccentric phase, the preloading, the pre-stretch of the agonist muscle. Agonist is the good guy, okay? Not antagonist, but the agonist. So when I jump, oftentimes when you see someone jump, what's the first thing they do? They just don't jump. They bend their knees, right? And they're doing an eccentric load. They're eccentrically loading. They're preloading their hamstrings. Your hamstrings and your gluteal muscles are going to go on a stretch, okay? Now, what's happening there? The hamstring, let's think about that being our agonist or primary mover. Because what's going to happen, if you look at it biomechanically, when you jump, that hip is going to be forcefully extended very quickly, right? And it's the hamstrings and the gluteals that are going to do that. So what we want to do is we want to lengthen the hamstrings when we do that. The hamstrings are attached to your istral tuberosity on your pelvis and back all the way down to your tibias. So when we do that, it's stretching the hamstrings, the agonist muscle, and we're preloading. The muscle stores potential energy in its series elastic components when it's placed under a pre-stretch. Check it out. Every one of those fibers of the hamstring, and when you guys go up in the anatomy lab, you can look at hamstring muscles. It's a series of bands that have elastic principles, just like a rubber band would. Okay, not quite elastic, unless you're on a steady diet of flubber, then it will become elastic. But they do have elastic principles. Okay, it's stored in the sarcomere cross bridges. I'm not too worried about that. But it stimulates our evil friend, the muscle spindle, who has taken off his black mask and is now playing for the good guys. Okay, so where we don't want the muscle spindle activated during stretching, for plyometric activity, we do. So we're calling on the muscle spindles. They're stimulated, they're woken up. So we're preloading. So that eccentric phase, okay? I come down, and we're going to put it all together, and it's going to happen very quickly. But in a short component, what we do for a plyometric phase, oftentimes we jump off of a box, okay? We come down off the box. It's an eccentric load of that hamstring, and we're preload and store some energy and wake up that muscle spindle. Are we into rocket science yet? Okay, is everybody fighting a good fight? Because this would be one of those times where you would want to fight the good fight. Okay, phase two, amortization phase. It's the time from the completion of that eccentric phase to the initiation of the concentric action, all right? There's a synapse between the afferent nerves and the alpha motor neurons. Afferent, it's what's going up to the brain and the spinal cord and what then is being sent back down away from the spinal cord. You minimize duration to fully benefit from potential energy storage. Second to muscle stretch reflex. The muscle stretch reflex is not going to hang out all day. All right. We want the muscle stretch reflex initiated by those muscle spindles to work for us. Now, I'm going to tell you, and I'll give you an example here. So this amortization phase is what's happening between that eccentric load or preload, right? Restoring the energy, and then we power out with a concentric phase. The body's response to the eccentric and amortization phases. So the stored elastic energy and agonist stimulation from the stretch reflex combine to create a powerful concentric action. All right. Now what happens is if I'm doing a box jump, I come down off the box, I get that eccentric load, that very short time frame, there's that amortization phase, and then I power out with a concentric phase. The concentric phase is when my hips now start pushing out, my hamstrings shorten, and I take all that elastic energy and power through. So it's down, up, and out. Okay? It's very quick. So, let me give you a different example. Do you know how we as Americans think that we're the only ones that know everything about everything, right? And if we don't read it in an American book, then it's probably not right. But I dare say Europeans, Russians, Germans, they know some stuff too, right? So the Europeans, Eastern Bloc nation, they kind of found out that amortization phase, that period where that energy is being transferred between the eccentric and the concentric, it lasts a little while, okay? Not forever, but we used to think like milliseconds, well, it could last in a well-trained person anywhere between 1 to 3 seconds, believe it or not. So this is an example. There's some really, really high-end power lifters, guys that can squat like 1,000 pounds and bench press well over 600 pounds. Well, they were trying to learn how to do that better, okay? So they read some literature, and they said, you know what, let's capitalize on this amortization phase. Let's learn about this plyometric load. So what they did for their squat, and think of them in a big squat rack. Does everybody know what a squat rack is and how you squat? So think about them being in a big squat rack, and instead of them putting their max load on, maybe their max load is like 900 pounds, okay, which is ridiculous. And maybe they are taking some things that we wouldn't take, but nonetheless, they have to train to become elite. But 900 pounds, it's not on the rack. They put 40% of the weight that they're used to putting on. Okay? 40%. And then what they did on the edges of the bars is they put these humongous, humongous rubber bands. These really, really thick rubber bands on the edges of the bar. Okay? And it's this sick amount of tension. Instead of it now being 900 pounds of tension at that top end, if you combine the 40% of weight that's on the bar and these ridiculously large rubber bands that are connected to the edge of the bar down to the ground, there's about 1,300 pounds of tension now. Now, their max is 900 that they can fully squat, but we know we're a lot stronger eccentrically, right? We're a lot stronger eccentrically. So these big, big guys get under the bar. They unweight the bar. The rubber bands take them down very quickly, right? Probably quicker than they're used to, but controlled. They go down very quick. They get in their full squat position, which I can't do because I have tight hamstrings. And that energy is stored like you would not believe. And instead of making it like really fast, like milliseconds, they may just make it like 1 second long. Their butt will touch like a bench or a chair, and then they power right up. Okay? Now, it sounds crazy, but at the bottom, because the bands aren't stretched, right? It's not 1,300 pounds anymore. It might be just that 40% weight. But as they power through, because they have all this plyometric energy, because didn't they do the eccentric load? They had a little longer amortization phase than we're used to, and now they're going through that concentric phase. They get back to that 1,300 pound weight point, and they're able to power through it. It's like ridiculous. Now, what's the trade-off? They go back and they put free weights on there. There's no more rubber bands, and it's not 900 pounds, it's 950 pounds. And all of a sudden, it feels ridiculously light because they're well-trained. Okay? That's just an example of how very elite people can use plyometric training to harness energy. So I give you that example because those rubber bands are almost exactly what's happening with your hamstrings. Okay? While those rubber bands don't exist on the 100% weight lift, that's exactly what's happening. Those rubber bands are coming down, they're storing energy, and then you're powering right through it, okay? That elastic energy. So, is that a good example? It's crazy. It's amazing what the body can do. Now, we use this a lot in high-end training for elite athletes. So, that stretch shortening cycle. Here's a summary. Here's a take-home message. It's a rapid eccentric muscle action. It stimulates the stretch reflex and storage of elastic energy, right? And it increases the force production during the subsequent concentric action. That's why we see in the gym a lot, people do like all these accessory motions a lot of times when they can't get through, like, you know, if you keep really good form, but a lot of times they're like kind of try to get like a plyometric phase. So as long as it's not hurtful, accessory motions aren't necessarily bad in the gym. You typically see form fatigue, and I know this counteracts what I'm telling you. In the clinic, it's not ideal because they're not healthy young individuals. They might be young individuals, but they're hurt. But sometimes we see minor accessory motions in the gym, and it's like they're trying to get like a plyometric phase into it, okay? So it's not rocket science. We're eccentrically loading the muscle, stretching it. We're kicking in that muscle spindle, that muscle stretch reflex. And then now that we did that, we're going to get a lot more concentric energy. Is everybody tracking with that? So, cool. That's the take-home message right there. So, we see this all the time. We see functionally, we see it when people walk and they're, you know, they hit the ground and they toe off, your calf is actually going through a plyometric phase, okay? This is a different example, but it still has a plyometric component to it, right? They come down, they run, they hit the ground hard. Right here, they're going through an eccentric phase, then an amortization phase, and then a killer concentric phase. That's why they can jump a lot further, because they're running, not just because of momentum. So how do we use this? Lower body jumps in place, bounds, box drills, depth jumps. Upper body, we do chest passes. Firing a medicine ball very quickly to someone's chest, they receive it almost like a bench press, and they push it right back off, okay? Very powerful. Single arm throws, power drops, trunk, 45-degree sit-ups where you go down, not quite all the way, but then you power back up. Jumps in place, that's a good one. That's why Sergeant Airborne makes us do this. You know, you go down, eccentrically, amortization, power up. Oops. But you just do your box jumps or your bounds in place. Okay, and we're going to try some in the clinic. But it's very, very powerful. You guys still got sound on me? So there's a time and a place for it. Now, where do you think in the Baylor model this exists? So, yeah. I mean, it's probably going to be a little later phase rehab, probably not in the early initial inflammation phase, right? There's safety considerations. There's injury potential. It's a high-level rehab. We need almost full strength. So lower body, when we look at lower body, remember these terms, and we really like to bring these together. You're one RM. What's RM? There, yeah, that's right. Repetition max. At least 1.5 times your body weight. So if you weigh 150 pounds, like me, you want to be able to probably leg press 200 pounds before you even do it. All right. You need good balance, right? You don't want to lose your balance while you're doing these things because it could set you up for injury. You need a good warm-up. You don't want inadequate warm-up. So this is something we typically, once folks are into their workout, then we can introduce it. Improper progression of lead-up drills. A lot of people, because this works well, like jumpers, volleyball players, outside hitters, basketball players, they use this quite a bit. And the problem is they see success with it, so they try to do it too much, and then they develop injuries, like your tendons that connect your kneecap to the rest of your quadriceps, your patellar tendon, your Achilles tendon. It works very well for bounding, but you can't do it any more than one, maximally 2 days a week. And if you do it 2 days a week, the workout, the plyometric workout that you do that second day a week should be very different from your first one. Improper shoes. That's not good. Ever see these bounding shoes that the basketball, it's like a shoe that has no heel to it, that will put you on nothing but the balls of your feet? I can tell you, those are BAD. They're BAD. Because what it's doing, it's improperly loading your Achilles tendon to the point that you're very susceptible for injury. So if you can't bound in a regular pair of shoes, then, I mean, I don't like those things. And that's not what they're talking about, improper shoes, but you really don't want to be in your retro Chuck Taylors, you know, your black and whites, you know. They look good when you're out of polyesters, if you're going for that look. But and I only say that because I have a pair. And if we all go out one day, like to a class trip, and we're all in civilian clothes, you guys are, you know, you're dressed professional, but I dare say none of you guys are going to look as good as me, because I'm a hip dude. But, okay, it's a curse. It's a curse. Short, bald, and hairy is in these days. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous. Short, bald, and hairy is where it's at. I don't know what to do with it sometimes. Lots of prayer. So where does plyometric exercise? All right, let's go for the gusto here. Wicked. That is wicked. Okay, so lab activities. We do a little squat jumping. We do some death jumping. Upper extremity, some power drops. I'm not a big fan of that. Trunk, 45 sit-ups. It's not rocket science, okay? But this is an important component of rehab for those elite athletes, okay? This is a great workout. And you know what this does? It develops confidence in a controlled environment. Oftentimes, your post-surgical patients that aren't ready for that next level, we're having them start doing some basic box jumps in the clinic. You're standing off of a box, maybe 8 inches high, and you're just landing and then powering out of it, okay? And we could do all kinds of things. We can mark the distance, other broad jumps. It's very aggressive. It's a very aggressive form of strengthening, okay? You're going to get a really wicked eccentric load, and then you're going to power through. So it's something that we do in the clinic when the folks are really ready for it, when they're up in that power component. Can you see how there's a speed component to this too? All right, it's a very fast transition. I talk about it slow, but it happens very quickly, right? And because we know power is both a function of both force and speed, it falls within our power elements. That's power. Okay, there's your squat jump. Check out my man. He did exactly what we wanted to do. Eccentrically loading those hamstrings. Eccentrically loading the gluteus maximus. Eccentrically loading the calves. Okay? Powering up after he put everything together. So he just went through the concentric phase. I will tell you, if you're used to working out, this is why we really like elite athletes to do one day a week, one good day a week of strengthening, because we should be incorporating maybe one other day a week of plyometric training, and that's enough. So I love it. As a certified strength and conditioning specialist, I love seeing elite-level athletes or just citizen athletes out on the fields doing squat jumps because, you know, they got it together. If you're pressed for time for training, one of the best workouts for lower extremity is doing 3 sets of these squat jumps because it will fire every muscle in your lower extremity. And they get progressively harder, but you do 10 of these, you're feeling it, heart and lung effect. So, but ever see like those NFL guys that got the right training? They're just ridiculously ripped. They have like this physique that's like, where'd they get this? Oftentimes they get it from these types of things. Those really high-end workout programs always have a plyometric component to it. Here's a depth jump. Check this out, sports fans. This guy's on a 24-inch box. He's coming down. He's stepping down. Huge eccentric load. He's getting the muscle spindles, muscle stretch reflex, amortization, and then he concentrically powers up. Very powerful. Here's our power drop, right? Don't miss. Huh? Dropping that ball. Lots of love there. Lots of trust. She's accepting that. Same. She's eccentrically loaded here in the triceps, anterior shoulder, pectoralis major. And then she's concentrically powering through after that muscle stretch reflex, that amortization and concentric phase, right? 45-degree sit-up. And I dare say this cat needs it. Anytime you see someone in quasi-PT gear and it's untucked, it's because they need to do these. No, I'm only kidding. Do you know the Air Force now can wear a PT uniform that's untucked? Okay? So, you know, and I watch the Air Force very closely because I'm prior Air Force. And I'm very proud of the United States Air Force. They do what they do better than anybody else in the world. But, you know, sometimes I'm really glad to be in the Army. You know, like, say that I was born again hard, you know? Because, you know, I used to work the main gate and check IDs. And God bless those guys that do that in the rain, in the snow, in the cold of Minot, North Dakota, and, you know, Sembach Air Base. Because that was young William Laura one day. And, of course, I made a nice transition to the Army. Now I'm a medical officer in, like, a nice air-conditioned or heated clinic. But the Air Force can now wear a PT uniform that's untucked. And they can wear small logos on their PT socks, you know. I don't think they're allowed to wear pom-poms. And then oftentimes they wear these crazy, crazy spandex pants because there's other stuff that would hang out if it wasn't concealed with that girdle. I mean, those spandex pants. So listen, if you ever see your Air Force brethren running around in their PT uniform, don't make the correction of tucking their stuff in. We don't correct Air Force folks anyway because we know they're beyond, like, help. But that is totally illegal. So isn't that, that's, God bless the United States Air Force. And I will tell you, in the morning, class leaders, you do not have to sing the Air Force song, okay? Because you know, as I'm fixing my coffee every day, I'm doing it for you, okay?